We turn then to the prophecy of Nahum and chapter 1. The prophecy of Nahum and chapter 1. Nahum is a lovely name. It means consolation. In a sense, the prophet's name describes the message which he was called upon to deliver in his day. It was a message of consolation to a people afflicted and oppressed. The prophet introduces himself here in verse 1 as Nahum the Elkoshite. Now, that evidently means that he came from a town or an area known as Elkosh. But where was it? The answer is that no one really knows. But from the prophecy as a whole, we may assume that this was somewhere in the south of Israel, in Judah itself. Another question which arises is, when did Nahum live and deliver this prophecy? Well, that too is not easy to answer. We can say, generally speaking, that it must have been in the 7th century BC. And it must have been then, because the prophecy of Nahum is very much concerned with Assyria, and in particular with its capital, Nineveh. Now, you'll see three times in the prophecy that Nineveh is mentioned. In the introductory verse, chapter 1, verse 1, the burden of Nineveh, which means a weighty prophecy and prediction concerning the capital of Assyria. And then in chapter 2 and verse 8, we read, Nineveh is of old like a pool of water, yet they shall flee away. So again, a prediction of the fall of Nineveh. And then in chapter 3 and verse 7, it shall come to pass that all they that look upon thee shall flee from thee and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? Whence shall I seek comforters for thee? So the prophet is foretelling the overthrow of Nineveh. Now that helps us, because Nineveh fell through the combined forces of the Babylonian and Medes in 612 BC, 7th century. But we can be more precise. It must have been, therefore, before that date, because the prophecy is about such a time, and there is clear prediction and foretelling of what happened in 1612. And the earliest date, that's the latest date it can be, of course, just prior to 612. But the earliest date identifiable here is in chapter 3 and verse 8. Art thou better than populous No, or No Ammon, as the full name is. Now, the prophet is threatening Nineveh with what has already happened to this place, No, or No Ammon. Where is that? Well, No Ammon was a city in Upper Egypt, about 450 miles south of Cairo. And we know that the king of Assyria Ashurbanipal, destroyed No or No Ammon in 663, they say. So it must have been after 663, because No has already fallen, and it must be before 612, because the prophet predicts the fall of Nineveh in that year. So we can safely place the prophecy of Nahum between those two dates, 663 and 612 BC. Now, turning to chapter 1, we observe that in this opening chapter, God is seen acting in a very powerful way on the world stage. If you set it in the context of the whole book, the description is clearly a description of the way in which he will deal with Nineveh, that is the capital of Assyria. And God revengeth, we read in verse 2, he'll take vengeance on his adversaries and reserve wrath for his enemies. And then in verse 3 we read this: the Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. Of course, the figure there is taken from nature, and it represents the method of God's providence, which is sometimes awesome and mighty. Here, of course, the whirlwind and the storm refers to his judgmental dealings with Assyria and with Nineveh, its capital. Trouble is coming upon them, both country and city, like a storm. And God will be in this. He has his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. But the language used by the prophet, whirlwind and storm, need not refer to judgmental troubles only, but to any kind of troubles. Let me quote you some words here from Job chapter 30 and verse 22. Now you'll know that Job had many troubles described in the first two chapters of the book. And later in the book, we hear Job reflecting on what has happened to him and what has overtaken him. And here is one such verse in Job 30 and verse 22, when he says to God, "Thou liftest me up to the wind." Meaning is that he feels as if he's in a terrible thunderstorm. Lightning flashing across his way, sheets of rain striking him on all sides. And it's as if God has put him in a storm. So the storm, in a verse like that, doesn't just indicate judgment, but it indicates any real affliction. Now, returning to Nahum chapter 1 and verse 3, we must see the meaning of it clearly and plainly before we proceed any further. The trouble that will overtake Nineveh is a trouble which is brought by God. which God will direct, and which God will use for his own purposes. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwinds, in the whirlwind and in the storm, which will overtake Nineveh. But my friends, given that the words can have a broader application for trouble generally, as in that instance in the book of Job, this is a reference in the wider sense to afflictions generally which come upon us. And we can say of them, whatever their nature may be, that the Lord hath his way in them, in all of the things that arise, in all of the things that overtake us, in all the things that cast us down. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. Now, this evening I just want to open that a little. And I want to speak of two things. First of all, troubles, as described here. The trouble for Nineveh, the trouble for us, whatever it may be. It can be like a whirlwind and like a storm. So I want to speak first of troubles. And then secondly, I want to speak of comforts. Because in these terrible difficulties which sometimes come our way, it is most comforting to know that the Lord is in them, and that the Lord has sovereign control of them, and is working gracious purpose out, even while the storm rages, has his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. First of all, then, troubles, the whirlwind and the storm. Is it not true, dear friends, that sometimes believers find themselves in such circumstances? There is a hymn which begins like this. It's by Henry Alford, the commentator, but it was in Christian Hymns. And the first verse is this: "Lo, the storms of life are breaking, faithless fears and hearts are shaking. For our succour undertaking, Lord and Saviour, help us." Storms of life. Poetic description, and one I think we ourselves are accustomed to use. The storms of life. When is it that life seems to confront us with the whirlwind and with the storm? Or what is the likeness between the two? What are the parallels to be drawn? I don't wish to spend a great deal of time on this, but I want to draw out the figure somewhat. First of all, a storm breaks sometimes quite unexpectedly. The disciples knew that on the Lake of Galilee. One moment all was peaceful and tranquil, and the next the winds roars, and the lake was in ferment, and the little vessel was swiftly tossed upon those waves. But so it is in life. We can be going along, having no real concern. And then, very suddenly, something happens. Something disturbing happens. It gets worse. And ere long, we find ourselves in the midst of strife. Now here is a verse from Solomon which describes this in Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 12. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time, when it falleth suddenly upon them. We say, peace and safety, suddenly destruction. Secondly, they can rise with great power. And these troubles can cause us to feel the full force of affliction. Storm is indeed a fearful thing, and it can strike hard. Not only is it quick in its rising, but it is powerful in its outworking. It was so, of course, in the case of Job, already cited. We read that he was smitten with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. Job 2:7. That suggests not only something which happened unexpectedly and therefore suddenly, but something which occurred with great force, so that his health was shattered and his life was threatened. Veritable storm. Thirdly, as our troubles develop, they can sweep all our refuges and supports away. We only have to think of the 46th Psalm and those familiar words. We will not fear though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Terrific upheaval. And of course the psalmist is saying life is sometimes like that. The storm breaks and even the most stable things and even the most fixed things in our life, these are shaken. It may be our health. It may be our work. It may be our financial security. It may be our domestic scene. It may be our future prospects. Utterly shaken. Such is the storm. I do not know whether you've ever been in one, but my recollection of storms which I've experienced are that they are very fearful things, because nothing seems safe anymore. The storm rises and roofs can be blown off of houses. Cars can be moved from the road. Huge trees can be uprooted. I remember the fir tree at the bottom of our garden. Never liked the thing and I was tempted sometimes to drive copper nails in late at night, but it didn't belong to me and resisted the temptation. But it put us in the shade all the time, and and ate up all the goodness of the soil. You couldn't grow anything near to it. And it was such a huge, great thing. And then one day, I think it was some years ago now, it might have been in the 70s during that stormy period, but a storm was really rising, and I heard this great crack. It was like the sound of gunfire. I managed to look out the window and see this huge fir tree falling towards the house. I remember the same thing happening on the farm when I was a boy. Same sort of fir tree, much bigger. But they tell me that they fall victim to a storm quite easily because they're so dense that they put up a kind of barrier to the wind. The wind can't go through, and therefore they experience the full force of a hurricane wind or a tempest. The wind is stronger than the stability of the tree. Well, it's a fearful thing, but storms do come with destructive power. And they do remove the things which we thought were permanent. Suddenly, you awake to find you're critically ill. Suddenly, you awake to find your marriage is no longer safe. A whirlwind and a storm. The fourth point I make is this, that in no way can we prevent the wind or in some way control its effect. These things are greater than we are, and they overcome us. You think of Jacob. He couldn't in any way avoid what happened to him with reference to young Joseph. It happened, it was out of his domain, out of his jurisdiction. When Hezekiah fell ill, as in Isaiah 38, no doctors or professional men could aid him or save him. He was a victim twist in this terrible illness. The fifth point is this, that it seems in such times that everything is against us. That's it, isn't it, when you're in a storm? The wind is contrary. That's a biblical expression, of course, with reference to that incident already referred to, the disciples on the lake. And the wind was contrary. That was the problem. The wind hadn't been contrary. They'd have got to the other side the quicker, safe and sound. But the wind was contrary. And there are times when in life we do feel that things are contrary to our hopes, to our prayers, to our expectations. Contrary, indeed, we conclude, to our well-being, to our happiness. We sympathize with Jacob there in Genesis 42, in that lament. Let me quote you his words. Genesis 42 and verse 36. He says to his sons, "Me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me." Against me. Of course, many a believer has had cause to say that. Life is against me. I try this course and life is against me. I turn to the left, it's against me. I turn to the right, it's against me. Everything is against me. All of these things. And we conclude that nothing goes for us. There is a sixth point of resemblance here. When in a real storm, the force comes not from one particular place, but in the storm, you feel as if you're got at from all sides. So that the problem isn't just here, but it's there. It's not just in the past, but it's in the future. Problems surround you. And the apostle's comment on that is most interesting in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 8. We are troubled on every side. We are perplexed, persecuted, cast down. It just appears to us that there's no relief. Everything's going wrong. And on every side, there is grief. A seventh point is this, that the effect seems chaotic. Have you seen those pictures of the devastating hurricanes which struck areas of the world? And the cameramen come in soon afterwards. It was a tourist resort. Look, look. Look at the state of things. Cars turned over. Houses demolished. Rubble thrown in every place. Chaos. Whirlwind. Storm. Sometimes we feel that it just doesn't make any sense. What was it all for? Before it was ideal. Look at life now. Hard. It is to keep faith. Why such devastation? Judgments which are a great deep. A great deep. And of course we could continue and we could say things like this, that the storm goes on very often a long while. We look for relief. And it eludes us. The storm wages and rages. And there seems no terminus. Hasn't life thrown at us its worst? No, there's more to come. Awful thing to be in such a storm with no abatement at all. And where do we turn? To whom do we go? In our hearts there is fear. Concern first perhaps, then anxiety, but then fear of what will become of us. These things are bigger than we are. And we just can't deal with these things. There is no standing. Well, I hope to God you never find yourself in the storm of life. But believe me, such troubles do arise. And when combined, they make a storm of terrifying magnitude. And we are tossed. We are tossed from fear to despair. If you say to me before I leave this point, well, why is it like that? One answer to that would be we live in a fallen world. And when sin came into the world, trouble came into the world. It is part of the curse which was pronounced in Eden at the beginning. The second answer to that question would be this, that men and women have corruption in their hearts. And as a result, things go tragically wrong. Many a marriage has suffered a scorn because of corruption, lust, desire. Some are from God directly, judgments upon the world. Some are from man and his own creating, as it were, directly. Oh, God is over all. And of course it's by, thirdly, such troubles that God works out his purpose. We know that all things work together for good, and God glorifies himself in using the effects of the fall and the corruptions of the human heart. He glorifies himself in sovereignly directing the troubles of this world to his own glory, to his people's good. Thou hast made all things for thyself, and all things work for good to them that love God, who are the called according to his purpose. Well, enough, my friends, of troubles, the whirlwind and the storm. Let's turn to comforts. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. Now, what does that tell us? First of all, it tells us that God is present in the trouble. The picture emerging, you see, is of an awful storm which is raging, and God walking in the midst of it. He has his path. That's what we would say. He has his path in the whirlwind and in the storm. So he's there. And my friends, that's the first thing I would impress upon you if you're in a storm at the present time, that the Lord is in it with you. When Joseph was cast into prison in Genesis 39 and 20, the very next verse, 39:21, says, "And the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy." Is it not always so? "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." Or take this in Isaiah 41:10. "Fear not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God, and I will strengthen thee." Afflicted believer, you are not alone. Whatever sense may tell you, you are not alone. One walks with you in the fiery furnace. Appearance is like unto the Son of God. Thomas Brooks says, "Such scriptures are breasts full of divine consolation." The second comfort is this, that God has a plan. Oh, yes, he has. He has a way in the whirlwind and in the storm. He knows what he is doing, and he is overruling it to bring to pass his counsels. Doesn't the scripture speak of God having his eternal purpose. Ephesians 3:11. And what about this in Psalm 33:11? The counsel of the Lord standeth forever. God is in it because something's in his mind. A third thing which comes to us as a comfort is this, that in his sovereignty, he is powerfully working to bring his plan to pass. Psalm 135:6 says, he doeth according to his pleasure. Isaiah 14:24. Surely, as I have thought, so shall it come to pass. And as I have purposed, so shall it stand. So here, the first comfort is the Lord is in the storm. The second is, he's pursuing a plan. And the third is that he's powerfully bringing that plan to pass. A fourth comfort is this, that there is nothing left to chance or to fortune. I don't read here that God has most of his way in the storm, but accidents do happen. Unforeseen circumstances do arise. And, of course, these things are outside of his dominion. Not so. That's his way. Fortune doesn't have its way. Accident doesn't have its way. Chance doesn't have its way. He has his way. In the whirlwind and in the storm. Proverbs 26:31 says, the lot is cast into the lap. Seems to be a matter of luck how the lot turns out, but the disposing thereof is of the Lord. Nothing happens accidental. All that men ascribe to chance, choice of God is first determined. Nothing can escape his glance. The fifth comfort is this, that it is God who is responsible for what has overtaken us. He has his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. He is the God who is exalted and sovereign over it all, as indeed the next words make clear, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. So he's over it. He's over it. Over all, God, blessed forever. Oh, what a comfort that is. What a comfort to Job. The Lord hath given, and the Lord hath taken away. What? The death of your children? The Lord hath taken away. Faith sees God riding the storm. Can evil befall a city? Amos 3:6. And the Lord hath not done it. He is over the storm. God is sovereign over your present calamities. The sixth comfort here is this, that though you might see the troubles raging, everything is in order. And he is controlling it. and he is directing it. He has his way. God is not depicted here as a man who's in some confusion. And there he is in the midst of the storm, holding his hands to his head, saying, "What now? What now?" No, he's moving. And he's moving the storm. And the storm is not going its way, it's going his way. And so is it in life. All is under his sovereign control. Wasn't that what the Lord told one of the churches of Asia Minor in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10? Fear none of these things which thou shalt suffer. Ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. 10 days, Lord? Who said so? I said so. Master of the storm. Tribulation, persecution, imprisonment, for the period I determine. Not the period Nero determines. Knowest thou not that I have power over thee? Thou couldst have no power over me except it were given thee from above. God. Sovereign. Controlling. Directing. The storm. The seventh comfort is this. He knows. He knows all about your situation and your condition. Now, I know unbelief was ready to challenge that. And the suggestion arose in your heart, does God know? Does God care? My dear friends, it's of his making. He has full possession of the elements. He is working his purpose out. He's in the storm with you. And he appreciates the force of it. And he knows the strength you need. And he says, I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will uphold thee. So he does understand. And he can sympathize. And he will afford support. The eighth comfort is this, that the reason for these present stormy days is not always apparent to us, but it is ever so apparent to him. Remember the words of Christ, how lovely they are. They will be written in your homes, on your walls. John 13:7, what I do, thou knowest not now, thou shalt know hereafter. It is a general principle. We don't know why life is like this, in such upheaval. Why I'm so battered and bruised. Why I have no peace. The reason is with him. Rides upon the clouds with his cherubim. And is sovereign in all the earth. The ninth comfort is that when he has achieved what the storm was set out to accomplish, he can subdue it as easily as he awakened it. He stood up in the hinder part of the ship and said, peace, be still. And the elements which the disciples thought were totally out of control. And so it looked. Insofar that they cried, "Carest thou not that we perish at the word of command?" Fell silent, surrendered to the will of God manifest in the flesh. You say to me, "I can't see that it will ever be right again. Forget not him that rests in your vessel. He possesses all power and all authority. And even the winds and the waves obey him. What manner of man is this? He is our Lord, and he is our God. Bring our troubles to an end." And the last comfort I give you is this, that when that hour strikes, blessing will follow. Job had his storm. What a storm! But read the last chapter. "And the Lord blessed Job, and his latter end more than his former." And so it is. God is the God of compensation. He's the God who makes up to us our losses. "I am thy shield, that when the storm is at its most violent, I will protect thee. And I am thy exceeding great reward. And when it's over, I will bless thee." So, my friends, what do we do? And we read those words again, and we take them to heart, and we believe them. And though we are tossed to and fro and are at our wits' end, we say this: he has his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. So then, believer, look to him who is invisible. He is with you. Trust in him. He is the God of all wisdom and the only wise God. Be at peace. Someone is looking after you, and someone is leading you on. Know that it's for good. For since the blood of Christ was shed, nothing is for evil. Wait patiently for him. Hope to the end. And never let a problem rob you of your hope. For your hope never rested in a circumstance. It ever rested in a sovereign God. Hope. Hope to the end. And finally, my brethren, rejoice. Rejoice because the storm overtakes all and sundry. When it overtakes an unbeliever, there are troubles, but no comforts. You may feel at the moment that life is rough, but you have a loving, powerful, faithful God on your side. That is a privilege of stupendous magnitude. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Blessed is that people whose God is the Lord. Now you may say to me as I finish, oh, a strange word tonight, I'm not in any storm. I'm glad for you. But blue skies give way to thunderous clouds. And you will be unique if you pass through this world without a storm. Before it comes, while it proceeds, and when it's over, you take to heart these words. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm. Now I know why he says, fear not. Amen.